Radio.org, or ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, economic worries are back on Wall Street's radar after jobs data showed labor market momentum slowing. We'll get a local economic perspective from James B. Huntington on why September is proving to be a volatile month. BuildFest, part of a three-year pilot to develop a signature design build program, part of the Bethel Woods Art and Architecture Festival. This year, they're launching a multi-year initiative to integrate digital and traditional fabrication techniques. We'll speak with Dr. Neil Hitch from Bethel Woods. Plus, some great music performances coming up. April Virch and Cody Walters celebrating the 45th anniversary of the Old Time Fiddlers in Beach Lake, and the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra's fall opener. That's all coming up. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The two main presidential candidates will head for Philadelphia and their debate tomorrow night. Vice President Harris will arrive later this afternoon. Former President Donald Trump's campaign says he will travel to Philadelphia tomorrow. Trump has been writing online about the upcoming vote. He says that when he is elected, people who cheated in this year's election will be prosecuted and given long prison terms. He also talked about cheating in the 2020 election. There was no evidence of that, and Trump has long lied about the election being stolen. Former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney says she and her father, former Republican Vice President Dick Cheney, are planning to vote for Vice President Harris.
Given the closeness of this election, particularly if you're going to find yourself voting in a swing state, you've got to take the extra step. If you really do recognize the threat that Donald Trump poses, then it's not enough to simply say, I'm not going to vote for him.
She spoke to ABC News this week. Stocks opened higher this morning after a big sell-off last week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 300 points in early trading.
Stock in Boeing, which is part of the Dow Index, got a lift after the jetmaker reached a tentative contract with its machinist union. The deal averts a potential strike that could have grounded production at Boeing later this week. The agreement calls for 25% pay raises over the next 4 years. Google goes on trial once again today in a federal courthouse in Virginia facing antitrust charges, this time over its business matching advertisers with online publishers. Google's search engine was already found to be an illegal monopoly in a separate trial. And DirecTV is asking the FCC to weigh in on its business dispute with Disney, which has kept Disney programming off the satellite service for more than a week. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The National Autism Association says there has been a spike in the number of recorded drownings of children with autism this summer. The group put out a new alert in hopes of saving lives. NPR's Kristen Wright reports.
The National Autism Association is mobilizing communities and first responders to check nearby ponds and lakes first when children with autism go missing. Co-founder Lori McElwain says many of these children are drawn to water.
A lot of times people think to search door to door, maybe inside the home for the child. But with kids with autism, they head straight to water.
She says at least 27 children with autism have drowned in the U.S. since June.
Time is of the essence, and they go missing very quickly. Often they die within the first hour, so every minute and every second actually counts.
McElwain's group is working with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to prevent the loss of more life. Kristen Wright, NPR News.
Again on Wall Street, the Dow is now up 301 points at 40,647. The Nasdaq is up more than 1%. It's NPR. Germany's domestic intelligence agency says Russian military intelligence is carrying out attacks against NATO and European countries. NPR's Rob Schmitz reports from Berlin.
In a post on the social media platform X, Germany's domestic intelligence agency said it was issuing a warning against a group known as Unit 29155, a cyber group belonging to Russian military intelligence known for its involvement in the poisoning of former Russian double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter in Britain 6 years ago. Germany says it's issuing the warning alongside the FBI, the NSA, and other international partners. The warning comes at a time of heightened concern in Europe over suspected Russian hackers and spies since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. Earlier this year, Germany accused Russia of cyber attacks on Germany's governing Social Democratic Party, as well as on companies in the logistics, defense, aerospace, and IT sectors. Rob Schmitz, NPR News, Berlin.
The National Hurricane Center is watching a storm system in the Gulf of Mexico. It's about 300 miles south of the mouth of the Rio Grande. It's expected to become a tropical storm by the end of the day today. Forecasters also think it will develop into a hurricane later this week. Current forecasts project a hurricane could make landfall on Louisiana's southern Gulf Coast this week. The storm is also expected to pour up to a foot of rain on southern Texas. Weather forecasters also say there will be dangerous heat today in southern California and parts of the desert southwest. Some of these areas will see triple-digit temperatures. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Skoll Foundation, dedicated to powering social innovators to transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As you heard on NPR News headlines, U.S. stocks are jumping this morning as the market rebounds from the worst week of the year. Why such steep losses last week? Well, let's ask our local economist and author, James B. Huntington, for some answers. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
He joins us every Monday to give us the lowdown on Work Shift Live. Wow. So, yeah, a little jittery last week. What was going on? Was it the Friday jobs report that sent some shivers through Wall Street?
Yes, it didn't look so bad. It looked kind of innocuous to me, but it didn't do anything. It didn't do anything really good. To run down the numbers here, we have 142,000 net new non-farm payroll positions, a.k.a. jobs, which is one of the lowest we've had for a while. Seasonally adjusted unemployment ended its increases, and it went down actually from 4.3 to 4.2%. Unadjusted unemployment lost the same thing. There are 7.1 million officially jobless people, an improvement of 100,000. But from there, it wasn't as good. Long-term unemployed, those out 27 weeks or longer, was 1.5 million for the third straight month. The employment population and the labor force participation rate both held at 60% even and 62.7%. Average hourly private non-farm payroll earnings gained 14 cents, which is more than inflation. It's now at 35.21. But the number of people working part-time for economic reasons or those who are working only part-time, but looking for a full-time job, their numbers went up 200,000 to 4.8 million. The AJSN, American Job Shortage number, told us that latent demand is down about 250,000. It's now at 17.6 million. That's how many jobs we are short per the measure. Now, if you add up all of this, what really happened was a bunch of people who joined the labor force, many of whom didn't find jobs last time, left the labor force this time. So the number of people saying they're not interested jumped 1.3 million in a month. The number of employed actually went down despite the unemployment rate falling. So that's really what happened. And otherwise, it really didn't do much of anything. We made no progress. We made no gain. The 142,000 was offset by people like the part-time for economic reasons. So there was really no progress at all. It's more complicated with how people are thinking about the interest rates that have people judging whether it's good or bad, but it really was a nothing, a no progress jobs report this time.
And as we were saying, there's a rally going on now. And so now the focus, does that move toward inflation again, like more inflation data? I mean, what happened at the end of August, and then, you know, what are people looking for now in terms of inflation?
Well, the end of August, we had the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index coming out. It said that annual inflation was 2.5%. That's actually up 0.2% from the previous month. They said if you have the core index, which removes food and energy prices, that was up 2.6%. These numbers are still quite small, so they tell us that interest rates, or rather inflation, rather, is leveling out. It's continuing to drop. It's not down to the 2% the Fed wanted, but it's really awfully cool right now. I know prices have been pushed up by previous inflation, but from here, they're not going up much at all.
All right. And then you mentioned the job openings last week. How common is it for folks to be working multiple jobs?
Yes. Well, it's more common than it used to be. And we have a number from the Wall Street Journal that says 5.3% in July, which is up from 5.2%. It's been creeping up a lot during this decade. So those numbers are also almost guaranteed to be understated, that they don't include a lot of side hustles that don't count as jobs, and there still is a lot of overlap, a lot of people who are not getting recorded as working multiple jobs. So it's on the rise, and it's a cause for concern, because when we hear numbers like, 142,000 net new jobs, which is good, even as low as it has historically matched up, because our population isn't increasing enough to absorb that many jobs. We're still seeing more and more people working more than one job. Now, this can be any number of choices, from people who can't possibly make a living on what their first job pays, to people who are overemployed, remote workers who are working two or more jobs. There are interesting stories there, who are pulling way over 100,000 doing that. But it's a lot of different people go into this, but I would like to see a continued on the jobs report tabulation of how many people are working multiple jobs, along with a improvement in how they collect that data, because it is something we need to be keeping track of.
Something else to keep an eye on, algorithmic collusion. Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota, has submitted a Preventing an Algorithmic Collusion Act bill, and Vice President Kamala Harris mentioned it. She made headlines this month, cracking down on that. What is that, and why should people be aware of it and concerned?
Really, all it is antitrust violations for the electronic age. It's people getting together to set prices illegally using an algorithm, using computational procedures to determine what that price might be. And it still involves companies illegally coordinating raising prices or keeping them higher than they could be before, as even just the same as it is in person. Often you have they say that there is a wink and a nod agreement often between competitors, and one way or another they just know the thing is there. And it's turning out to spread to a lot of different areas. It was the rents. It was the rents before that were in some areas that were being kept high, or they were determining how high they could push them and coordinating with each other illegally. It's an American law. It's not the same around the world. Like, for example, you've heard about OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, which coordinates oil prices. And, well, if they did that in the United States, they would be arrested for price fixing. but it's legal in a lot of other countries.
Yeah, you mentioned
this is this is a cause for concern, and it may not be so easy always to catch people who are doing this, but it's really moved from furtive phone calls or whatever to online systems.
Yeah, you mentioned the rents. Last week, the Justice Department sued RealPage, charging that the company, which uses an algorithm powered by artificial intelligence to help landlords set rental rates, referred to its products as, quote, driving every possible opportunity to increase price. So that,
well, it's illegal,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah. All right. Let's look at the numbers we talked about this morning. What else is going on with oil, metal prices, and how did they change?
Okay. Prices early this morning, we have gold at $24.91, minus 33 over the past 2 weeks. I wasn't on the air last week. That's down, but as you'll see, it's down less than almost anything else. Gold is awfully robust when it comes to holding its value. Silver, $28.01, which is down $2, 89-to-1 ratio. Silver is really dragging. I don't know quite what the problem is, but it's that ratio is reaching levels it hasn't spent this much time at before, ever. The Dow Jones Industrial Average early this morning was 40,345. They reported that it was up 300 for the day, and that would cover about 3/8 of the 2 weeks loss of 830. So I think the markets are saying that a quarter point interest rate drop, which is being talked about instead of a half point, really would not be enough. And this is the response. NASDAQ, 16,691 early this morning, down almost 1,200. That's badly hurt by an artificial intelligence sell-off. There's big concerns about AI actually delivering the profits for not just the chip makers, but people who are selling AI things. And that's causing a bad thread of things going through NASDAQ. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 68.61. That's down $7. Well, finally it showed up at my local pump. It was down a dime a gallon, and it may go down more than that, even if the rate just stays there, because it's often slow to react. Bitcoin, 54,385, down 9,300, leading the pack in volatility as it often does. It's running scared with all the other stuff falling. I mean, investors should know that if you're buying Bitcoin to avoid risks in the Dow, for example, or NASDAQ stocks, that usually when those things go down a lot, so does Bitcoin. That's really no safe haven at all. British pound, 1.3095, down a penny and 13 hundredths. We're looking like interest rates may stay higher here, so that's hurting the value of that. And the euro, which is 1.1044, down 1.3 cents. Japanese 100 yen, 70 cents. It gained a penny, and, well, something went up this week at least. So all in all, this could rebound, but stocks especially will need to improve. They're at the front, and they seem to be taking the lead as far as other prices in general for commodities go these days.
All right, James B. Huntington, keeping us connected with the pulse of the economy with local economic perspective. He's a local economist and author. He joins us every Monday, although I guess you're getting a September break. We won't see you next Monday, so we'll catch up in 2 weeks.
I'll be there in 2 weeks.
All right, lots to talk about that, I'm sure. Thank you, James B. Huntington.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about Build Fest, part of the Bethel Woods Art and Architecture Festival. It's happening this week. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi there, it's Jason Dole inviting you to join me and the whole Radio Catskill crew Thursday evening at La Sagona Narrowsburg for the Radio Catskill 2024 Community Awards. We're honoring those organizations and individuals dedicated to environmental stewardship in our listening area. Come enjoy some wine, French fare from Chef Damien, and celebrate the good work that these folks are doing. 2024 Community Awards Thursday evening. Get your tickets now at WJFFradio.org.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps' One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. BuildFest is part of a 3-year pilot to develop a signature designed build program as part of Bethel Woods Art and Architecture Festival. This year, they're integrating digital and traditional fabrication techniques. And here to tell us more is Dr. Neil Hitch, curator at the Bethel Museum at Bethel Woods. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Tongue-tied this morning. Tell us about BuildFest. As I mentioned, a 3-year pilot. So what's been happening so far? And then let's talk about what this new initiative is.
Sure. Well, one, it's a lot of big words to get tongue-tied over. Yeah. I'll tell you that right there. All right. So over the last 3 years, we've been developing this idea of it's a design build festival. And so we've been partnering with regional architecture programs at regional universities and kind of developing a program where, all right, I'll say this. Today in a school of architecture, almost everything is on a computer. You've moved to drafting on CAD, 3D programming. For most students, you experience a building that you're designing through a screen.
Right.
For some students, you're going to spend 4-6 years in an architecture program and never hold a drill. But the minute you start work, you are in the construction industry. And so there are other of these types of programs in the United States and in Europe, which is just like a camp that offers someone the experience of seeing something they've designed built, and students build them. So the program kind of is this hybrid experience with construction, but experience with design and seeing something that you have envisioned in your mind built. So there's few opportunities to do that. Bethel Woods has the capacity, and this is part of the DNA of the history of the Woodstock Music and Art Fair in 1969. So these things like really melded.
We'll talk a little bit more about that for folks who may not understand why. Well, why is this place that where this festival took place with music, building, architecture?
Sure. So the Woodstock as a festival is like the first festival that happens that you are come to a site, the Yasgur Farm site, and build a holistic environment to see music in. It wasn't a stadium. It wasn't a racetrack. There were 45, other festivals in 1969, most of them at racetracks. Woodstock is designed to be this art experience. Like there's a whole art crew that comes from University of Miami, and they build art installations. Like you are surrounded by art. So that was the experience of the festival.
Today, and it was called the Music and Art Fair. Well, let's not forget.
That's correct. As much art in the name as music. So the DNA is already there, but it's also, we've been investigating archaeological sites of where some of these things were constructed in 1969. But we also, like, the historic site at Bethel Woods is not a site where we are, celebrating dead stuff, celebrating history. Like, it is very much alive, right? The intent of the historic site is to use that site to create, to give someone today a defining experience. Like the countless oral histories we do where somebody talks about, I came for these 3 days and it was a defining experience. So that the history we would like to recreate is that, having a university student on site doing something that they will remember for the rest of their career.
Recreating that original sort of DIY mindset at the time as well, right?
Yes.
And in the last 2 years, you've had students there that have, in fact, never picked up a hammer or a drill.
That is correct.
And what has that been like for them?
Well, I mean, so it is kind of, it's empowering, number one. But number two, if you have gone through, you know, you come out of high school, you go to college, right? And then you, almost everything about learning today just is ephemeral, where being in the field, building something, holding a tool, using a saw, like there's something kind of raw and powerful about that. But to step back and see something you've built, to experience it, to use it, it's really, really cool. So it was a pilot program. 2 years ago, we had about 35 students on site. I think three universities, we built three installations. Last year, we had about 65 students on site. I think there were six installations built, nine universities represented. This year, we have about 120 students coming. Oh, wow. We will build seven installations. I think we have 11 universities represented. So the program has grown, which was the intent. This year we are building three kind of large installations up on Best Road Camping. And the intent of that is to build something that can be utilized next year at festivals. As we have developed camping, as we are developing signature festivals, the art and architecture program kind of goes hand in hand with what Bethel Woods is doing.
So there's a functional element as well?
Yes. What we are trying to create are areas that will just be like people will congregate. Maybe an activity will happen or an activation. When we talk about it, it's a drum circle. Maybe, you know,
right.
But one of the things we're building is developed as it could be used as a small stage. So that the Princeton University, who's been working for the last 2 weeks actually on site, they're going to build a structure they call Timberland. When we talk about this being computationally designed work, like that's a big word, but what that means is these are designed on a computer and they've been fabricated at the university. So about 2 weeks ago, Princeton brought their installation, which was fabricated. We've been putting in ground screw foundation to hold it, and they will build it like a puzzle. And it will be kind of this cool hybrid. A lot of it's cut with a robotic arm. So it's this hybrid robot fabricated student built stage.
It's so cool to know that this is happening besides the, you know, great concerts and museum stuff, but that these students are investing their time and energy into something and creating something with the spirit of all this, and that folks get to experience. Now they can't go and experience now while it's being fabricated. When will this sort of be like open to the public?
Well, so we are going to do an opening on Sunday.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
What's that Sunday? The 15th.
Yeah.
But as well as most of the installations we are doing are kind of small follies. Like it's experimentation with design, right? We're doing three big ones up at Best Road Camping but we'll be doing these in association with Harvest Fest. So you can come experience what we're doing at Harvest Fest.
So there's more information. The public opening of the installations is at 11 a.m. Sunday. Information at BethelWoodsCenter.org. And then you guys have your own opening reception and party Saturday night featuring lectures by Katie McDonald of After Architecture, Greg Corso Sports Collaborative, and a performance by Sub Pop recording artist Gorilla Toss.
That's true.
Awesome.
You could also come on Wednesday, the 11th, which is the Bethel Woods Horizon Happy Hour, and meet the students because the Build Fest, the Art and Architecture Festival, will begin Wednesday night, but it begins with Horizon Happy Hour.
There's a happening all the time at Bethel Woods. We have a vested interest in this week's Horizon Happy Hour here at Radio Catskill because the Community Advisory Board, of which you are the chair as well for Radio Catskill, is going to be there getting input from the community about what's going well with the station and what they'd like to see more of, and featuring a couple of other cool performances.
Yeah, that's true. The cameraman will be playing as well as Mark Partridge of Ambient Barn,
right,
which
here,
is
program, yeah,
here.
And then Creatures as well.
Yes.
So you've got a great, cool lineup of music there. Plus, you've got the youth from this program going to be
that's
around,
true,
too.
That's true. There'll be a lot of people. It should be a lot of people on Wednesday.
And that's a free event, Horizon Happy Hour, a free admission. And you can meet members of the Radio Catskill Community Advisory Board while enjoying some cool jams.
Yeah.
I'll swear, you're busy man here, besides building all this stuff during BuildFest, you're still continuing the oral history project and some recent news about a grant for that.
Yes, we were just awarded an IMLS Inspire grant. This is a grant that we is a great anchor for the 5 years of the Oral History Initiative, because this last year of the initiative is all about local stories. So this is a partnership with the Borscht Belt Museum and the Borscht Belt Marker Project, and we will be around the county doing oral history pop-ups. We will be in Boca Raton, Florida in January. A lot of people who experience the Borscht Belt now live in Florida.
Move south.
Yes.
Good time to visit as well.
And we are collecting stories of, like, the Catskills in both its heyday, but for us specifically, you know, we're looking at that 60s moment of what's going on in the Catskills in the 60s. But certainly the stories are bigger than that, and they will be shared by both the museum at Bethel Woods and the Borscht Belt Museum.
And, you know, this initiative has been going on, and you're aiming to collect as many of these stories as possible. How is it going for you? Are you kind of on pace to get what you need, or are you still looking for more?
Well,
obviously,
one of the questions, you know, always is like, when are you going to end? And I said, well, I don't think, you know, I hope there's not a day when you come to the museum and you're like, I have a story about, you know, being in the Catskills or being at Woodstock, and we say, well, we're no longer interested in your story. Yeah. But we have put a lot of capacity. When we talk about the 5-year initiative, that's really about setting aside staff time to do this project, and very specifically to seek grants that would fund the project. It's gone very well. We are going to do about 450 stories this year. And we will enter next year again with this capturing local stories. I know I say this every time I'm on the air. Every time I go out somewhere, somebody's saying, I was 9 and my mother was making sandwiches and we were passing them out on the street. And you hear that all the time locally, but those stories really aren't representative or represented as a history recorded in our collection that will be preserved forever. Right. So we want to make a real effort at capturing and preserving those local stories.
Turn those anecdotes into history.
Yes.
Dr. Neil Hitch is the curator at the museum at Bethel Woods. You can see the community advisory board on Wednesday at the Horizon Happy Hour at 5. And then you can see the public installations for BuildFest that are going to be fabricated and put up this week by all the university students from across the country. You can see that on Sunday. All that information at BethelWoodsCenter.org. Dr. Neil, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we've got a preview of an upcoming old-time Fiddlers concert that is with April Virch and Cody Walters Saturday in Beach Lake right after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, the demand for a spot at America's top colleges is higher than ever. So why don't they increase supply?
Reputation matters.
And is an elite degree mainly a status symbol?
I think that's a gross mischaracterization of American higher education.
It's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. April Virch and Cody Walters are a true partnership of kindred musical spirits, combining their unique backgrounds from Virch's native Canadian Ottawa Valley and Walters's heartland roots in Kansas. Their music transitions from traditional Ottawa Valley step dancing and fiddle tunes to old-time fiddle banjo duets with vocal harmonies to sandpaper foot percussion, all contrasted with Virch's soprano voice. These world-class musicians are performing Saturday at Beach Lake, celebrating the 45th anniversary of the old-time Fiddlers. Here's a little bit of April and Cody together performing Firewood. ¶¶ joining us live on the phone is April Virch. April, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about how you and Cody came together, the Canadian and the Kansian.
Yeah, I started the April Virch Band in 2000. That's when I started touring full time. And I actually hired Cody to play bass in my band in 2007. And at the time, the majority of my work was in the U.S., though I was still living in Canada. And it was much easier to have U.S. musicians in my band because getting a work permit for Canadian musicians, including myself, was very difficult and expensive. And so that's how we met. We started playing together in 2007 and toured together, got to be good friends, and we got married in 2018.
And you've been performing since you were a child for over 20 years. And it's not often that I get to introduce someone as a fiddler, singer, step dancer. So explain a little bit about what the Ottawa Valley music is and that sound and then that tradition rooted in step dancing and fiddle tunes.
Yeah, I grew up in that tradition, and it, you know, I thought every little girl played fiddle and step dance. My family attended jamborees and dances and jam sessions all the time, and the Ottawa Valley fiddle and step dance tradition came out of the lumber camps. So when Irish and Scottish and German and Polish and French immigrants first settled in the Ottawa Valley, logging was the main industry. And so they were sharing what they remembered, the songs and tunes and dance steps that they remembered from their home countries, you know, sitting around in the logging camp late at night when it was cold and there was nothing else to do before the next day's work. And our style came out of that. So it's a real melting pot of different traditions all scooped up into one.
Is there, there's a lot of different traditions and melting pots. Is there a specific sound or thread that kind of goes through it?
That's hard to say. I think depending on your background, you would hear different things because it has a little bit of everything. If you were from a Celtic tradition, you might say, oh, I hear that Scottish influence. Yeah. And if you were, you know, French, you'd hear that.
It does pick up on all the melting pot part of it. Yes, you and Cody are back on the road after the summer season of freezing and canning in your garden. I understand. How does it feel to come out to the old time Fiddler's weekend with the 45th anniversary in Beech Lake this Saturday?
I'm really looking forward to it. You know, we're lucky to play a mix of different things, concerts and performing art centers and festivals. But the Old Time Fiddlers is close to my heart because, as I said, I grew up in that tradition. And one of the things that we did every month was go to the local Renfrew County Fiddlers Club, you know, a fiddle group that held a monthly dance. And a lot of the people that I looked up to were at those dances. And this is a similar kind of event. So it's, even though I haven't been there before, it sort of feels like going home. And I think the fiddle community often feels that way. It's just one big family.
Talk a little bit about that fiddle community. It's as you mentioned, you know, you're grew up in Canada in the Ottawa Valley and Cody in Kansas. And you all, when folks come together, it really is this understanding of the roots and the traditions.
Yeah, I think it brings back, you know, memories. There's a common slate of tunes, even if you don't all play the same style. There are certain tunes that cross over every genre, and it's like you just have this other language really that you share, but also just the fact that everybody is so passionate about the same thing. It's, you know, it's like hanging out with everybody that likes to do the same thing as you is just magical.
You've had solo albums, I think over 14 albums as a solo artist, your own band, you're in a duo with your husband, Cody, other projects, I'm sure. What's the most fulfilling part of this for you, this whole experience?
I think it's just the sharing of the music, and that can be, you know, whether I'm teaching Zoom lessons, which I'll be doing in a couple of hours today, or if I'm at a festival, you know, giving a workshop, like I'll be giving a workshop for the fiddlers this weekend before the concert. It's it's just the sharing of that music, because, you know, we love it. We want to play it and pass it on and make sure that the traditions remain vibrant and healthy and evolving, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I love to play, and I play even if I couldn't, you know, do it for a living, I'd play at home, but it's in the sharing of it that I really feel the true joy of being able to do it.
And you mentioned that fiddle workshop. It's 2:00 on Saturday afternoon in Beach Lake at the concert. Tell folks a little bit about what you're going to teach at that fiddle workshop, and do I need a fiddle?
It is for the Fiddle Club members, so we're definitely going to focus on fiddle. We'll probably learn a tune by ear and then talk about some of the different bowing things that you can do and some of the left hand ornamentation that would spice it up a little bit. So yeah, just sort of take a tune, learn it, and then add some nuts and bolts so everybody can kind of make it their own.
Do you get that same sense of joy when you were a kid in the faces of some of the younger folks when you're teaching these workshops?
Yeah. We just got back from Arkansas last night, and we worked with a bunch of young players there, and I could definitely relate to how they were feeling. You know, they were really shy at first, but then they kind of opened up and warmed up, and you can sort of see the sparkle in their eye, and I know what that is.
Yeah. And your concert is at 7:30 after the workshop at 2:00. Admission is free. It's the Old Time Fiddlers at the Beach Lake Fire Company in Beach Lake this Saturday. That is coming up this Saturday. And I'm trying to find the information of where to get more information. Yes, it's at the Facebook page for the Old Time Fiddlers. You can find out more information there. And for April and Cody, you can find out more information at aprilverch.com. April, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing this traditional music, and I hope you have a great time at the Old Time Fiddlers concert.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for the chat, and we'll look forward to seeing folks there, and have a great day.
Thank you. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with some more music happening. The Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra, their fall opener. Fall, I said it, yes. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and this week on Latino USA, part two of our award-winning series, The Moving Border. We travel next to Tapachula, the new frontier for asylum seekers at the border between Mexico and Guatemala.
¿Tú has visto esta persona?
No, yo no conozco hoy porque hay mucho que diferente aquí en la plaza.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and joined in the studio by Classical Kit. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
Thanks for being here. And you've got some more classical music coming our way this weekend. What's coming up?
Well, it's the fall premiere, the beginning of the season for Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra. So the summer music festivals, those folks have packed up and left, but we are not bereft.
We've got
a lot more.
There's
still music, and it's the music that is so homegrown, and it's just great that Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra comes to us.
And we've got Andrew Trombley on the phone. He is the artistic director and principal bass of the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra to tell us more. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good.
So, Andrew, this looks like a wonderful program. And just listening to some of the music you're going to be bringing us on the 14th and the 15th, I'm wondering, because it changes from concert to concert, what instruments are you bringing to us for this program?
This is one of the few concerts a year where we do a full string orchestra. That was originally how we started ourselves, thus, you know, the orchestra name back in 2016 when we formed. But then since then, we've evolved and we've found a lot of joy performing small chamber music, but we still try to keep roots to who we are. The string orchestra instrumentation, it's a wonderful sound that is not, you know, I don't think it's explored enough within our country of classical music. Certainly see your symphonic orchestras and chamber music, but that string orchestra sound, it's such a special color. And, you know, that's why we want to open up with this program that we had, you know, particularly pieces like the Respighi. Respighi has so much wonderful music, but, you know, for any great string orchestra, these ancient airs and dances, it's one of those go-to pieces that you have to play to be able to really explore colors and blends in such a unique and fascinating way.
Well, it was interesting because I was listening to those this morning, and going through my mind was, oh my gosh, this has the lush, multicolor sound of Ray Vaughan Williams. And I didn't say it out loud. My husband walked in and he said, is that Ray Vaughan Williams? And yeah. I was like, oh, my, I can't believe it. My mouth was full of cereal. I couldn't respond. But you're playing three of the composers that I associate with that English sound of lush string orchestras. And you're also putting in something I hadn't heard, which was the Arensky, who I guess he was born, what, a good 15, 20 years before the others and died quite young. So I want to hear about the whole program, but I'm just curious about Arensky and who he was and how that fits into this program.
You know, the Arensky, it's a piece I've been fortunate to perform before, and this particular piece was known more as a movement out of his one of his string quartets.
Okay.
You know, Russian composer, absolute fan, adored Tchaikovsky, had a close relationship. And
did we lose you?
Andrew, did we lose you there? I think we may have lost him. We'll try getting him back there.
Yeah, let's get him back. I seem to remember last time he walked into a different room at where he thought it was more quiet, but there was less signal. So let's try to get him back. But in the meantime, I'll talk a little bit about the program. So they're going to be opening, as Andrew said, with Respighi's Ancient Airs and Dances, which is, I think, either a 4 or 5-part series, this third group of them that were kind of based on early lute music, but transformed with, you know, with a full string orchestra and but inspired by more ancient music. Have we got him back?
We got him back.
Great. Andrew, I was just
that's
okay. I was just describing the Respighi piece. So you were saying that Arensky, he had done some chamber music and he was inspired by Tchaikovsky. And so that piece, does it have that kind of romantic, lush string orchestra sound to it in this arrangement?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is his own original arrangement. And just seeing how it expands from variation to variation, it's a simple melody. You know, Tchaikovsky, as much as he was known for his, you know, bombastic overtures and symphonic repertoire, 1812, Tchaikovsky 4, you know, even in those big bombastic pieces, the slow movement is always, it's very simple in a way. It's based on a subtle, delicate, simple melody, something that, you know, he absolutely loved. Tchaikovsky was brilliant at utilizing these melodies and creating wonderful repertoire. And this Arensky is no different than that, taking that simple melody of Tchaikovsky's and expanding it from what is a delicate Russian folk tune into interesting and colorful and very enigmatic music in a lot of ways, using all sorts of interesting techniques, from your false harmonic. The variation at the end ends with false harmonics within the upper strings before doing a second part of the theme with the full orchestra, and that back and forth between the thin, frail sound to the full, lush sound of the full string orchestra is really a brilliant composition. And, you know, it's, again, you know, just like the Respighi in a lot of ways, it's another piece, another opportunity for string orchestras to develop sound and colors, which is one of the hardest things that you can do sometimes.
Well, and then you're going to be going on to a piece by Gustav Holst. And, you know, I think people are very familiar with his Planets, but I don't know. Yeah. For me, I think he had ballet music that I was exposed to early on a recording. Yeah. That had Britten on it and Walton. And so he fits right into that English kind of sound.
Oh, absolutely. And this is a piece that when, you know, he wrote it for, as much as he was known as being a composer, he was also a master educator. And his longest position was at the St. Paul School for Girls, which is the whole reason why he composed this piece. The St. Paul Suite was composed for the student orchestra at that time, which is not to say it's, you know, simple. It's exciting. It's lively. It's very youthful in a lot of ways. And I think that's why it was composed that the way it was. You know, I mean, as interesting as the Arensky and the Respighi are, and certainly when we get to the bridge, it's a much more mature, sophisticated piece of music. It's important for artists and for the audience just to have something that's fun, that just grabs your attention immediately. And that's where I think the St. Paul Suite is so brilliant. You hold your breath from beginning to end because you're having such a good time.
Yeah, so that has quite a few movements to it, right? So there's a lot of variety to it.
Absolutely.
So I've never heard that. I'm really looking forward to that. And then Frank Bridge, interesting character. I think born maybe the same year as Holst.
Mm-hmm.
And he's associated a lot with Benjamin Britten, correct?
Correct.
So,
yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Well, yeah, so, I mean, Frank Bridge, it's he doesn't have a huge swath of a catalog. You know, he doesn't have so many. He certainly composed a lot, but his music is not so commonly performed. He was known mostly as the teacher of Benjamin Britten. Benjamin Britten wrote theme and variations on music from Frank Bridge, so there was that close connection. Benjamin Britten always respected his teacher and his time with Frank Bridge. But, you know, this piece, it's very different, but very similar to, I think, how Benjamin Britten presents his music. Where, yes, it certainly does sound English, but not in the sense that Ray Vaughan Williams has that distinct English sound or Benjamin Britten has that distinct English sound. It's a very unique piece of music that I think just belongs in a world of its own. You know, one of those pieces that everyone just needs to have an opportunity to play and to perform. And I'm very thrilled that we get a chance to deliver this one to everyone, to the community. I personally haven't had a chance to perform it yet. You know, string orchestra repertoire, it's so rarely done within this community, within the musical community. So this is an opportunity when it was, you know, staring at me in the face. You have to jump on it.
Well, one of the things I love about the program you're going to play is, you know, there's so much darkness going on in the world right now. And this is a program that just has so much joy and optimism and, I don't know, and color, like the colors we're expecting soon up here in the leaves. You know, it's just like, for me, this is my favorite season, and this seems like a perfect way to kick off fall with this program. So I'm very much looking forward to it. So I just want to give the details, but before I do that, could you just let us know about the rest of the season? Like, what are you looking forward to after this September weekend?
Absolutely. Well, So one, our next concert is going to be October 26th and 27th. Both concerts will be in Monticello. For sure, Saturday night, we're ironing out the details, but that's likely going to be at the St. John's Episcopal Church. That's where Nesson Cultural Arts, our partner organization, they house one of their Steinway pianos, their grand piano. It's a beautiful instrument. So we'll for sure be doing our Saturday night program there. And then Sunday, we'll be exploring a new venue at the Landfield Avenue Synagogue. Nesson Cultural Arts, again, got another beautiful grand piano donated to us. It belonged to a cellist who lived and worked in the city for a long time as part of a very well-known piano trio, and he has moved up here. He donated that to us. So we will be performing on a brand new instrument that was donated, and we're going to be playing two piano quintets, the Lise Ferenc Quintet number 1 in A minor. It's a beautiful piece of music, really shows just that German classicism that, you know, you would experience. Well, she's French, but you know, that German style classicism that you would experience in a Mendelssohn. And then speaking of English music, we will be performing the Ray Vaughan Williams Quintet in C minor, which is a great bombastic piece of music. It's one of my absolute favorites.
Great. And then we'll look forward to that, but I want to make sure I get the details in for this weekend. So Saturday night, you will be at St. John's Episcopal Church at 15 John yep. Street in Monticello yep. at 7 p.m. And then Sunday, you'll be at the Reformed Presbyterian Church of White Lake, which people think, oh, 17B, and it is on 17B, but the address, if you're putting it into your GPS, is 6 Madison Road in White
Correct.
Lake. So that will be at 3 p.m., and I believe people can get tickets in advance, but they can also get tickets at the door. So
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for coming, well, not for coming in, but for being available to us this morning.
Oh, thank you, Kit. We always appreciate your time and your commitment to the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Andrew. And again, there's more information about the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra on their Facebook page and also Instagram. And you can follow Nesson Cultural Arts on social media as well. Kit, again, as you said, it's good to know that the music continues into the fall.
Yes.
Thank you, Kit. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill, a program reminder that we will be bringing you NPR's live special coverage of the ABC News presidential debate tomorrow, live from Philadelphia, beginning at 9 p.m. And on Thursday, join us in Narrowsburg at La Sagona as we celebrate local folks who are helping sustain and steward the environment for our Radio Catskill Community Awards. Tickets are still available, and you can find them at wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
From how we grow crops,
I think I'm eighth generation to farm,
to what we put on our plates.
Plant-based eating isn't, you know, scary. It doesn't make you less of a man.
And what we throw away.
Food waste? It's such a terrible word.
Climate change is influencing the future of food. That's what we're exploring this year during NPR's Climate Solutions Week. Join us all next week on Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. online at jeffworksjayville.com, and from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org, and listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, some sun giving way to clouds. There could be a thunderstorm in spots later this afternoon. High 69, cloudy, low 53 tonight, and a warm-up is on the way this week. Tomorrow, sunny and pleasant, high 70, 74 Wednesday, 78 Thursday, 80 by Friday. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.